Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking navigating the new era of cheap travel with Scott Kies.
That's right. Friend of the show, Scott Kies, is joining us. We've talked with him about affordable travel before, but we're excited to sit down with him for an in-depth conversation today. If you don't know, Scott is the founder of Scott's Cheap Flights, which is a travel platform with over 2 million members around the world. It's been called the travel world's best kept secret by Thrillist. It's received praise in the New York Times, among others. But before he became our favorite expert on ways to keep vacation costs down, Scott worked for years as a journalist. He had bylines in the Washington Post, The Atlantic, plenty of other publications, and now he's published a book titled Take More Vacations, which we'll discuss today as well. So yeah, with virtually everyone out there clamoring to take a vacation, we are really excited to be talking about this topic today. So Scott, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
We're glad to have you, Scott. And the question we ask everyone first off when they come on the show, every guest, is what they like to splurge on. Matt and I, one of our favorite things is craft beer. But yeah, do you have something like that in your life that you like to, every time you get some extra dollars that aren't going towards investments or saving, that you're maybe like, splurging on a specific activity or item?
You know, I do, and it's so on brand that it's almost disgusting, but it's credit card annual fees.
Oh. My
the binder of credit cards that I have would astound folks, and probably
a binder. Are you talking about like baseball card collection kind of
style
binders?
We're talking baseball cards, we're talking plastic sleeves, we're talking, collated spreadsheets, keeping track of everything. It's really over the top. And look, for a lot of people, it might be indicative of some pretty poor financial habits. Mm-hmm. But if you can handle it responsibly, treat your credit cards like debit cards, don't spend money you don't have, then it can be good. It can be a real boon for your frequent flyer mile balances, for and other things. And so that's where I splurge, is being willing to eat those $99 credit card annual fees.
$95 here and there.
$95 here and there. There's some that I'm loath to even admit how expensive some of them are, but you know, as long as they're worth
bucks,
it.
You got that $5.99?
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, the Amex Platinum up to close to $700.
Is it $7?
Annual
holy
fee. I think it's $6.95 if I recall.
My gosh.
And so splurging on those, as long as there's a really lucrative sign up bonus or something that makes it worth it, is where I like to feel good about splurging.
Maybe you can send a picture our way of your mind. I really would love to see that many credit cards.
It was one of the things that most astound, you know, Scott's Cheap Flights is an all remote company. We got to meet up all together a couple weeks ago in South Carolina for a little retreat. And it's the one fact that so many folks remember about me. You know, we did a little just kind of fun facts about each teammate. And this person has 105 credit cards over the past 10 years. And everybody's, that's Scott. That is 100% Scott. I remember the binder.
Seriously, I would love to see a picture of that. I'm a nerd of
your
organization.
Next level, man.
And so any kind of nerding out, but specifically with organization, and the fact that you're doing it with travel cards, with travel fees, with annual fees tied with those. I'm totally nerding out over here.
Yes.
You got to share that.
It's one of my things.
So on that note, let's just talk about Scott's Cheap Flights for a second. Like, what is the origin story? How did this come about? Because I doubt that you finished high school and were like, I'm going to start a travel site.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't even know that being a chief flight expert was a career path. That was a thing you could do, or much less start a company that with 60 people working for.
Your guidance counselor didn't shove you in that direction?
I certainly didn't major in this in college. But, you know, look, it was one of those things where, again, as you mentioned, I was working as a journalist. One of the great things about being a journalist is you're very inquisitive, you're very curious, you want to get the answer to things. And so as both a journalist and, as a journalist right out of college, who virtually all of them are very underpaid, I was faced with a problem. I wanted to travel, but I didn't have much money. And so every time I would search for flights to Europe, much less to Los Angeles or elsewhere, you know, I would find just really expensive flights. And so I knew in my head somewhere people were finding cheap flights, but I had no idea how to find them. And so I really kind of wound up over the course of a number of years digging into, why is airfare so volatile? How are people finding cheap flights? Mm-hmm. What are the strategies they're using? And this sort of quest, this investigation, wound up leading me in 2013 to the best deal that I've ever gotten in my life, still to this day, which was nonstop from New York City to Milan for $130 round trip.
Wow.
It was an unbelievable find. I couldn't fathom what I was seeing. You know, I've never pulled out a credit card from my binder so quickly as I had in that moment. And, you know, I took this incredible trip, went to a soccer game, you know, went to see AC Milan play a Champions League game, went skiing in the Alps, went hiking in Cinque Terre. It was great. When I got back from this trip, all my friends and coworkers, I guess word had spread, and they kept coming up to me, "Hey, Scott, you know, I heard about that great deal you got. Listen, next time you find a deal like that, can you let me know so I can get in on it too?"
That's right.
And so rather than trying to remember every single person I need to let know, I was like, why don't I start a simple little email list? And anytime I find a great deal from here on out, I can just send it out to everybody who wants it. And so that was how Scott's Cheap Flights began, much, much more as an accident than an intentional startup. And it was just a hobby for 18, 20 months or so, until it grew large enough that it was time to start thinking, is there an actual business opportunity here? And by 2015, turned it into an actual company. And now today, you know, 6 years later, it's got 60 people on the team. millions of people across the country signed up getting these alerts and making sure that they're not overpaying for flights and able to take those types of trips, like $130 to Milan.
That's so amazing, man. It's amazing how just kind of you figuring something out and then telling other people about it, how that can turn into, it can spread and become, you know, a giant business like the one you've created.
Totally serendipitous. I mean, it feels, you know, it's one of those things that I lie awake at night sometimes thinking, like, what would have happened if I just hadn't been searching for flights to Milan that one random Saturday afternoon? What if I just went to the beer garden instead of, like, staying home and being a dork and searching for flights on my computer? Like,
that would have been
what
Joel.
Would my life look like right now?
It would look like my life, Scott, which is not nearly as interesting.
Exactly. Maybe I'd be a podcast professional. Who knows?
You don't want to go down that path. Well, I want to know specifically, what's the anatomy of a cheap flight? Because, you know, you call airfare unpredictable and irrational. So how does a killer sale actually come about? How is it that something that is, you know, multiple $100s to Europe, how does that come across our paths?
Yeah, so there are a few things to think about here. Is that one is that we are living in what I call the golden age of cheap flights. And this comes in the backdrop of airfare, especially over the past few months, rising really quickly. And most folks kind of have it in their heads that, oh my gosh, there are no cheap flights left. But on the contrary, if you look at airfare today compared to where it was 10 years ago, airfare today, adjusted for inflation, is 35% cheaper than it used to be on average. And even more than that, it's especially cheaper on these sort of long-haul routes that you used to never see affordably. Flights to Europe, flights to Asia, those sorts of long-haul routes that typically you might have had to normally spend $800-$900, maybe more, for a round-trip flight. Whereas today, we see flights from all over the U.S., not just from big airports like Atlanta or JFK or, O'Hare, but from small airports like Dayton, Ohio, or Cody, Wyoming, Boise, Idaho, to Europe for under $400 round trip, sometimes even cheaper than that. And so the reason why those kind of have become much more prevalent today than they used to be is, in short, because the airline's business model has changed significantly. Certainly over the past 40 or 50 years, but even really over the past decade, whereas airlines historically relied primarily on economy airfare to fund their operations. But today, airlines actually make the majority of their revenue on things other than your economy airfare. They make it on things like selling business and premium seats. They make it on selling frequent flyer miles. Those credit card annual fees really do add up, but especially the other parts of credit card contracts, like selling it to banks, the interchange fees, the stuff like that, that banks really kind of make a ton of money off of. This is why it's so lucrative to them and why airlines benefit so much from the frequent flyer mile programs. They make it on corporate contracts. They make it on selling cargo space. They make it on certainly add-on fees. They make it on commissions. You know, when you book your flight, they always ask you, hey, you're taking that trip to Portland. Do you want a car to go with it? Do you need a hotel? That's all free money for the airlines. So the airline business model has changed from one where they relied primarily on economy airfare to fund their operations to one today that relies on things other than economy airfare. And that's how they can afford to offer those $300-$400 flights to Europe in a way that they used to not be able to.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like this is an intentional shift or pivot that the airlines are doing, which sounds like therefore they can offer those deals. But you talk sometimes too about sometimes there's like these mistake fares. Well, what's the difference between what I see as being sort of this intentional pivot of the industry, you know, to being able to offer some of these great deals and a mistake fare?
That's right. So that $130 round trip flight to Milan, the airline did not mean to sell that for $130. Okay. They meant to probably sell that for more like $1,300, and somebody in the back office forgot a zero at the end. And, you know, look, when those mistake fares pop up, they're not common, but they pop up maybe 6, 8, 10 times a year or so, you know, different routes, and they're totally unpredictable by their nature because they're a mistake. And so when they pop up, they only tend to last until the airline can fix it, which is oftentimes a matter of hours, certainly not a matter of days. That's why it's so important to find out about them as early as possible so that you could book them before they disappear. Those mistakes, you know, while they're rare, they're really the holy grail of the cheap flight world. But the vast majority of cheap flights are not mistakes. It's airlines actually intending to sell that flight from, you know, Dayton to Frankfurt for $345 round trip or something like that. And they intend to sell it that way because, again, they make so much money on things other than economy airfare that they make it, you know, on the front of the plane selling the business class seat. They make it on underneath the plane with the cargo. They make it on all the add-ons, bags and seat selection, but also on hotels and cars, that they just are trying to essentially recoup some gas money. They've got all the, they've got 100, 150 seats in the back of the plane. They might as well try to recoup a little bit of money on. But that it's not the kind of driving force for the airlines the way it used to be. And so the other thing to remember here briefly is that the airlines are locked in this really fierce competition with budget airlines. So, you know, United, American, Delta, these are all legacy airlines or otherwise known as full service airlines. They're having to compete really directly with your Spirit Airlines, your Frontier Airlines, and others. And what they have found is that the Spirit Airlines of the world, the Frontier Airlines of the world, they have been winning this battle for years. 20 years ago, the budget airlines were just a fraction of the overall volume. They flew maybe 3 or 4% of passengers, whereas the full service airlines accounted for about 75% of travelers. Today, it's down to the legacy airlines account for about 50%, and the budget airlines have quadrupled or quintupled. They're up to 16-17% and growing every single year.
Nice.
And the reason why is that leisure travelers treat airfare like a commodity. They just want to buy whatever the cheapest ticket is. They're not loyal to one airline or another. They're loyal to cheap flights, whether it doesn't matter what the airline is on. And so the budget airlines have been winning. The legacy airlines have tried to respond by offering basic economy or lowering their fares to compete with the budget airlines of the world. And the winners are all the cheap flight lovers out there, even if you never fly budget airlines, because you end up seeing cheaper fares on Delta, on American, on United as a result of that competition.
Yeah, and that's kind of what you do, right? You say, like, I love the budget airlines, but I don't really fly them. I kind of, like, use that competition to book on some of the main airlines anyway, right?
Exactly. We don't send out deals on Spirit. We don't send out deals on Frontier, but we benefit from their existence because they force Delta and American, United, JetBlue to offer cheaper fares than they would have otherwise.
Can you talk about searching for airfare and then booking? Because obviously it's great to get those Scott's Cheap Flights emails into your inbox and it notifies you of deals you might not have known about otherwise. But what are your favorite websites for browsing deals, or if someone's like has a specific destination in mind, maybe they can't be quite as serendipitous and just go to the destination that is most on sale. How do they start browsing in order to and maybe what tactics can they use to get the best deal?
Yeah, so the open secret in the airfare world is that all of the online travel agencies, you know, these are Expedia, Orbitz, you know, Hotwire, all those, Kayak, they're all essentially the same. Like, there's not one that is consistently cheaper than the other. Sometimes there'll be a little tiny bit of difference in fare, but typically they have basically the exact same fares. Or if one is cheaper, that one might not necessarily be cheaper on the next search. So starting off with the fact that there's no one place that's cheaper to search, to me, it just comes down to user interface, user experience. Which one do you like
literally
the best? Which
go
one
with feels... the site that you like the most.
Exactly. And so for me, that's Google funny. Flights. I find it to be quick, easy, responsive. You can search like 7 airports at the same time. So maybe I want to go to Europe, but I don't care where. You know, I can put in 7 different airports. I can just put in the continent of Europe. You can do flexible dates. It ends up just being a far better experience to search quickly quickly and to get results quickly than I've found elsewhere, where, you know, one search might take 20 or 30 seconds to return all the information. With Google, it happens in a microsecond. So that's why I tend to like it. But if somebody says, I just really, you know, I've been searching on Orbitz my whole life, I like it, you're not gonna miss out on anything by continuing to search there rather than another site.
Well, there are reasons too to book directly with a certain airline, right? Like can you talk about some of the reasons to book directly? You know, like on the airline's website once you've actually found that deal that you want.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, because there's a different. While it doesn't really matter where you search for flights, searching on Kayak is virtually the same as Google Flights and elsewhere. The best practice is generally to book directly with the airline. And there's a few reasons for that. One is that under federal law, there's something called the 24-hour rule, which says that when you book a flight directly with an airline, you're entitled to a 24-hour grace period from the moment you hit purchase, during which you can cancel and get all your money back, full refund, no questions asked.
It's kind of like that 5-second rule when you drop food on the floor,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Okay. Who knew that this actually could exist in real life? But
Scott's got a 10-second rule. So. He's a frugal guy.
But the federal protection or federal guarantee of a 24-hour rule only applies when you book directly with an airline. Now, that said, a number of places, Expedia, Priceline, or others, have their own policies where they say we'll give you 24 hours, but it doesn't have the same protection of federal law the way it does when you book directly with an airline. So, there could be an instance, it's an edge case, maybe you call at 23 hours, but there's a long hold, you don't get through in time. It ends up just being a little bit of you might have a little bit more difficulty taking advantage in some cases. Generally, booking directly is going to still make sure that the law is on your side. But more importantly, if something goes wrong with your schedule, if the flight changes, if you need to cancel it, if there's bad weather and you need to rebook or something or other, it's far simpler to do so when you can just chat directly with the airline rather than having to talk with the airline and the middleman that you booked through, because each of them might have different policies. Who knows? Like it can be a hot potato about who you get passed between. So if the flight happens to be significantly cheaper booking through a Priceline or an online travel agency, then if I'm saving $150, $200, sure, I'm going to book through the online travel agency. But if it's basically the same price or, within $10 or something, I'll generally book directly with an airline, because it tends to just be, it tends to work out better if there's any mishaps or any changes needed with the reservation.
That makes sense.
Yeah. One of my favorite tips in your book, Scott, you talk about building your own layover and how you say basically that's the key to crossing the ocean as cheaply as possible. So yeah, for people who don't know what that means, or they're like, wait, what is this? So you talk about how it can save 80% sometimes building your own layover.
Yeah, look, so I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I wanted to travel once to Norway. Flights from Washington, D.C. at that time to Norway were like $700-$800. But one day I stumbled across a flight that was from Washington, D.C. to Brussels in Belgium for about $225, somewhere in that range. And so I knew off the top of my head, once I get to Europe, once I'm in Brussels, I can get a flight up to Oslo or wherever for $50, $75. And so instead of paying $700 to fly from DC to Oslo and almost certainly still have a connection, I could just book this flight from DC to Brussels for $225, hang out in Belgium for as long as I wanted to, and then continue on to Norway for $75. And so
you get two destinations too.
You get two destinations. You get to spend as much or as little time as you want in your layover city, and you can save a lot of money in the process, because I paid $300 for that trip to Norway rather than $700. And so, it's not going to work every single time, but trying to think oftentimes, if cheap flights are a priority, trying to look at crossing an ocean, which, you know, can be pretty expensive, trying to look at it a little bit more creatively, knowing that once you get to Europe, once you get to Southeast Asia, it can be really cheap and easy to get on to your final destination. Now, this is especially true and especially the case if you're traveling to a small final destination. Let's say you want to go to a Greek island. You know, it's actually something called the Greek island trick, where if you want to fly to Santorini, flights are oftentimes, you know, $1,500 or something if you search it as a single itinerary from your home airport in the U.S. But there are many, it's pretty common to see flights from all over the U.S. to Athens, Greece, for like $500 or $450. Once you get to Athens, you can get a cheap flight onward to Santorini. You can get a ferry, you know, for $50 or something. And so by pairing it that way, not only do you end up with a far cheaper overall trip, but you also are then able to take the time, if you want to, you know, build in a couple days in Athens, be able to go explore the Acropolis or elsewhere, and before you continue on to the Greek island. So I think it's a wonderful strategy not only save money, but to make your vacation even more kind of interesting and robust than it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, a more robust vacation. I like that. Instead of just like the short layover. Well, Scott, actually, like, we want to talk a little bit more too about some of the, maybe like some specific routes where you've seen some of the best deals recently. We're going to talk about that and much more right after this break.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, we're back from the break. We are still talking with Scott Kies, who is the Cheap Flight Master. And Scott, first question
expert.
Back.
Not master. Well, I like master.
Master Sensei. I don't know. There's
the
a lot of...
CFE. That's his title.
that is my job title. Chief Flight Expert.
That's right.
There you go.
Right.
Well, he's basically the superhero of cheap flights.
And the one and only.
Yeah. Do you have? Are you like Clark Kent? Do you have some sort of get up
an
underneath
alter
your...
ego.
Where you're always ready to travel. You just rip off the button up and then you're just like heading to the
exactly,
airport.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. I need to think about this.
Well, first question back from the break. Scott, I am curious to know, what are maybe some of the perennial cheap routes? Are there certain things that pop up all the time? It's like, man, there's always a deal from here to here, or at least every couple of months, so that people can at least, all right, if there's just a few places that are always inexpensive to get to, where should I be looking?
Yeah. So when you're talking about domestically, the places where you consistently see the cheapest flights are to Florida. Just because airlines have had so much capacity. They're flying so many planes to Florida. Oftentimes, Miami is actually the most expensive one. But if you're willing to fly, for instance, to Fort Lauderdale or somewhere else, easy to find flights like under $100 round trip from the Northeast or under $150 from elsewhere in the country. Hawaii is another one that was historically quite expensive, but nowadays we see as airlines have really added a lot of capacity and as Southwest started flying to Hawaii, you regularly now see flights from the West Coast to Hawaii under $250, sometimes under $200 round trip from the Midwest or the East Coast for more like under $400 round trip sometimes if we're lucky. And so those pop up much more commonly than it used to. When we're talking about international, the places where we've seen, I think, the highest volume of what I would consider to be pretty cheap flights for Central America, Costa Rica. Really, really common to see flights from the U.S. under $300 round trip, sometimes under $250. Colombia, similar fares that become very popular among travelers and easy to get too cheap. But then Western Europe, I think, is the one that a lot of folks really might have missed how affordable it is to fly there in a way that it didn't used to be. A decade ago, you would almost never see flights to Western Europe under $800, $900 round trip, whereas today, almost every single week, we see flights from the U.S., and again, not just from New York and Chicago and Los Angeles, but from small airports as well to Western Europe under $500 round trip, many times under $400, sometimes even under $300, especially if you're traveling during a non-peak period. And so the places that tend to be most, you see those most commonly are Paris, Rome, Madrid, and Barcelona. But really all over Europe, if you have just even a little bit of patience, you tend to see pretty regularly. And so for folks, Europe, most popular travel destination or travel continent in the world. And so for folks who are excited for that trip, maybe haven't been able to take it for a couple years, the outlook is very, very good. Even when we're thinking about this summer, one of the last thing I'll note here is that, look, a lot of folks are thinking right now about how expensive flights have become, but that is more true among domestic flights than it is among international flights. Demand for domestic flights has rebounded basically fully, if not higher than it was in 2019, whereas demand for international travel is still down about 25% compared to where it was pre-pandemic, whereas capacity for domestic is down about 10-15%. It is in some ways between the U.S. and Europe fully recovered. So what that means is that whereas domestically there are more people competing for fewer seats and that resulting in higher fares. For flights to Europe, there are fewer people competing for more seats, and especially in on a route or on, you know, on a type of trip that was historically very, very popular, very sought after. And so I think the relative value of flying to Europe this summer, this fall, even this spring has gone way up because you can still find those under $500 round trip flights. I was looking just yesterday, you know, it was cheaper to fly to Iceland or to Paris than it was to fly to Los Angeles from the East Coast. Wow. And so thinking a little bit more overseas, I think, is where the value is right now.
That's so interesting because that's not what you would expect, right? And like, it makes me think
you think
that,
shorter distance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have to fly over the ocean. I think that's a holdover from COVID, right? Because like in my mind, what I picture is like folks are like, okay, let's get back to traveling a little bit. And it's like, okay, should we go ahead and do the big European vacation? It's just like, you know, maybe not. Maybe we're still not totally sure about what that looks like. And they stick with the domestic travel. Whereas it's like, man, like Europe is, it's wide open. Mm. It is open for business. And like you said, if they're still down 25% as far as the demand, I mean, in my mind, that would explain the reason that there are deals there.
I mean, I think a lot of it too is the fact that still today, you know, even as we're recording, the mask mandate is gone. You no longer need a mask.
That's right.
On airplanes in the U.S., but the mandate to show a recent negative test to fly back to the U.S., even if you've been fully vaccinated, is, I think that is the mandate that actually has a pretty big impact on travel demand.
Gotcha,
I think that's
gotcha.
Probably the primary reason why international travel interest is still significantly depressed, because folks are worried, what happens if I fly to Paris and I catch a breakthrough infection? Even if I'm asymptomatic or totally fine, I have to hole up here for a week, 10 days, 14 days. What about my job? What about my pets? You know,
so it's not just like an emotional or mental barrier. You've got those actual rules.
It's
that
a
are
practical one for many people as well. Yeah,
that's true.
Talking about other changes from COVID, though, Scott, change fees are something that kind of have always been a thorn in the side of the consumers. Those kind of vanished, you know, as a silver lining to the pandemic for everyone who likes to fly. Are there any sign of those returning in the near future? Or do you feel like those are done for?
I don't think so. I think, you know, the airlines really made a big hullabaloo about how they were permanently getting rid of change fees. Rather than getting in a whole philosophical discussion of how permanent is permanent, I would be very surprised to see if them come back in any significant way in the next 5 or 10 years.
Just like, don't I think, use the word transitory, okay?
Yeah. Exactly. This is becoming a real question, just like Jay Powell faces. But I think this is one of the things that a lot of folks need to really kind of factor in their mind when they're thinking about booking flights, is how much easier it is now to change your travel plans after you book in a way that it didn't used to be historically. You know, back before the pandemic, when you booked your flight after that 24-hour grace period when you could cancel for free, you were pretty well locked into your dates. And if you wanted to change your travel dates, you had to pay an arm and a leg to do so. I mean, we're talking $200-$400 penalty in addition to any fare difference. And so what changed during the pandemic was the airlines basically across the board got rid of those change fees, so that now today when you book a flight, if you later after you book want to change the dates, you don't have to pay any penalty at all. That, you know, you still do have to cover the fare difference if your new flight is more expensive, but if your new flight is cheaper, you actually get the difference back in the form of a travel credit. So, you know, it makes it a lot more sort of possible to make prospective bookings, to make flight bookings on trips that you're maybe not 100% sure about. Maybe you're still a little iffy about COVID or this or that. And you can say, I'll book that flight for this summer, lock in the fare now while it's cheaper. And then if later on I decide it doesn't look like a good time to travel, if there's some new scary variant or something, I can always push my trip back, you know, 3-6 months, however long, and not rather than being locked into my dates.
Nice. Yeah, the environment has changed when it comes to booking travel is what it sounds like. While we're talking about fees here, Scott, in your book, you talk about, and you actually reveal like why add-on fees, why separate fees to check a bag, why they have become so common. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, so there are a couple things going on here. One is that this is in large part thanks to the rise of the budget airlines, you know, not just Spirit, not just Frontier, but globally, you know, Ryanair, Air in Europe and EasyJet, Air Asia in Asia and whatnot, becoming basically the most profitable way to start a new airline. And the way that they've been able to, the business model that they've really honed in on and found success with, is to have a very cheap headline fare, by far the cheapest when you search on Google Flights or when you search on Kayak, but then to have a lot of add-on fees that are varying degrees of optional. You know, there are some that really are optional. You don't have to choose your seat. You don't have to have a check-in, checked bag. I usually don't travel with one anyway. But there are some that are maybe a little bit less optional. Many budget airlines, in fact, most of them require you to pay for a carry-on bag, which I think I find a little bit loathsome, but it's there. Even with those fees, it can still be a very good deal in many cases on a budget airline, but it's something to be aware of. But specifically in the U.S., there's actually a tax code reason why these add-on fees have become so popular. And the reason why is that when you buy a domestic flight, there is a 7.5% federal excise tax that is applied to your fare. And the fare, that you pay only includes things that are not optional. Any optional fees like bags, seat selection, I don't know, meals or stuff like that are not subject to that 7.5% excise tax. And so what that means is that it's more tax advantageous for the airlines to separate out what they consider to be optional items, because they're not having to pay tax on that revenue the way they are having to pay tax on the airfare. So that's part of the reason why you see these sort of add-on fees becoming such a big business, as the airline accountants have really kind of earned their keep and advised the airlines that this was going to be a moneymaker for them.
Yeah, that was kind of like one of the most fascinating parts of reading your book, was kind of seeing that. I didn't, like, of course, that's going to change their incentives and their desire to lower fares and then find other ways that they're not taxed on to make money. It just makes sense, right?
It's a way for them to shelter that income.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and in a very similar way, I think this is part of what helps explain why we see so many cheap flights, because the value of you as a customer for the airline, it's not just the money you pay for your economy airfare, and that's a dwindling source of value. In many ways, you talk about how big data is such an important and valuable part of so many companies now. When an airline knows, they have your travel data, they're much more able to market to you effectively. Oh, Scott loves to take vacations to, Hawaii in February. So let's keep advertising, to him around, I don't know, October or something, when maybe he books those flights before. Hey, there are good deals to Hawaii. Oh, so-and-so is a frequent flyer. If we can get them to sign up for a frequent flyer program, they're much more likely to be a repeat customer. They earn miles with this airline. They don't want to let those miles go to waste. They end up being able to, almost thinking of the airfare that you pay for your economy seat as something of a lost leader. But your
it's all about
future
that data.
Business. Yeah,
yes.
Your future business, your data being an increasingly valuable source for the airlines.
Well, you sent out an email recently about saving money when it comes to booking a rental car, and that obviously in the pandemic has become just a hairier thing. And especially last summer, some of those rental car prices, like, it didn't matter how much you paid for your flight, because your rental car was actually the most expensive thing about your trip. So
the carpocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember people renting U-Haul
driving
trucks.
Driving around in U-Haul movie trucks.
In order to save money.
An affordable way to drive around Hawaii.
Yeah. Yes. And so, yeah, you're taking the road to Hana in your 20-foot U-Haul. But yeah, can you talk to us about how folks can save on that aspect of travel? Like, how can people get a rental car without paying an arm and a leg?
Yeah, look, one of the strategies that you can really use effectively with rental cars, and one of the things I do, is to check back and check back often, because let me give you an example. So I recently had a trip to Boston for a relative's wedding. And so as soon as I found out about this wedding, I went and I booked a rental car, knowing that when you book a rental car with most rental car sites, whether it's an online travel agency, or I use Costco Travel personally because I find the cheapest rates there, your reservation is free to cancel. And so what that means is as soon as I know I have this need for a rental car, I'll go ahead and book it. And that is setting a price ceiling. So when I first booked it, I'd have to go back and find the exact number. I think it was like $166 was my first booking for a two-day rental. But then, I just set myself a calendar reminder every Monday to go and just do the same search. And so the next Monday, when the rate went down to $150, what I did was I booked that new $150 rate and I canceled my old $166 one.
Go.
And so I say, pocketed that $16 and then ditto the following Monday when it went down to $140 or something and did the exact same process. And then the next week when it went up to $175, didn't matter because I'd already locked it in at $140. Again, thinking of it as a one-way ratchet it's a real heads I win, tails you lose. When the rental rate goes down for the dates you need, then you can rebook for free and pocket the difference. If the rental rates go up, no big deal. You've already locked in the lower rate. And this is something that you can do really effectively with car rentals because you don't have to prepay for them, because there's free cancellation. And so trying to make sure you book as far in advance as possible. And then just, again, we talked about how I'm a real kind of type A person when it comes to organization. I just set myself a calendar reminder every Monday morning to just go and do 30-second search, see if the fare is any, or if the rental rate's any cheaper now. And if it is, I'll rebook it.
Love it. Calendar reminders save me so much money.
They run my life, basically.
They keep the IRS from hounding me. Make sure I pay my quarterly estimates, all of that. Well, Scott, obviously you're a huge fan of travel. You probably want all of us to do something that you are doing, but you are going to make an argument, or in your book, you make an argument for why it is that we should probably travel a little more often. And we will actually get to that plus a couple other questions here right after the break.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Joel, longer days and warmer weather, it means our family is spending a lot more time outside. It's great. Like, literally yesterday, I was in the front yard, Kate was in the garden, and I was kicking the soccer ball around with a couple of the kids. I'm loving it. But something else that you can do for your family this spring, shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year. Kate and I both have policies in place, and that means we have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to either of us, our family can cover expenses while getting back on our feet.
Yeah, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, by the way, it may not have enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. On top of that, Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
That's right. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
All right, we are back from the break, still talking with Scott Kies about the new era of cheap travel. And Scott, I just want to talk about airline seats shrinking for just a second, because in your book, you say that they are actually shrinking. I feel like that confirmed my suspicions, because I'm 6 foot six, and I feel like it's
I thought that they were.
I'm perennially uncomfortable.
Now there's the data to support that.
Right.
Yes. My apologies. Yes. It's called densification. One of the reasons why we're living in the golden age of cheap flights is the seats are not as big as they used to be, because airlines are trying to fit more onto the plane every single year.
So am I being cheap or frugal by not upgrading then? Like, should I pay extra for more legroom, or is that... Or should I just grin and bear
it? If you've got the means and interest, by all means. Look, I mean, that's one of the great things about the kind of current age of flying, is that you can pay to upgrade to premium economy, where you're going to have basically, you know, rather than the 30 or 31 inch of legroom, you'll have 34, 35, 36 inches. And so, you know, look, it can make a big difference, especially if you're a tall guy. But for most folks, you know, buying the economy seat and putting up with it for a short flight tends to be the way that they go. If it's a longer flight, or if you're really tall, opting for those upgrades can be worth it.
Can I just reminisce? Scott, did you ever fly AirTran back in the day?
I did, yeah.
Okay,
sure did.
Do you remember the AirTran? I forget what, it wasn't business class, what they called it, but it was something where they had those nice, bigger seats, and and for some of the legs, some of the shorter legs, it was only a $40 upgrade, or a medium.
You know, there's
medium
a similar,
like,
there's a
bucks.
Similar aspect that happens with Spirit today, where they sell the couple front rows that, you know, it's not exactly first class, but they call it the big front seat, where it's, you know, significantly larger at a relatively reasonable upsell, you know, often 40, 50, 60 bucks. And so, like I said, you know, if you're a larger guy, if you are a larger woman, or you just need to, you know, be traveling a further distance, that can in many ways be the most affordable way to have a roomier ride, looking at that big front seat on Spirit.
Good to know.
I love it. Yeah, you're paying by the inch. Maybe
yeah, like exactly.
$10 an inch.
They're busting out the ruler.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as people have options, right? Like, I think that's the biggest thing, is that you truly are able to fly in a way that fits with your budget, in a way that you value your money in ways that you want to spend your money. And you know, I think one of the things that all this competition has brought is that no longer are you just subjected to the standard ticket.
Yes.
You can go cheap. You can go really cheap. You can. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you don't like traveling in a fanny pack. You know, where you've got like 2 days worth of clothes just in a little fanny pack, so you don't get charged. But for those who do want to do that, I love that those options are out there, including Joel, to pay, you know, extra
yeah,
10,
look,
20,
no,
30
look,
bucks.
I think that's one of the biggest stories of the way that air travel has changed over the past 40 or 50 years, going from a one size fits all offering where you could, you know, people could fly and you would get, it was a very, you know, much more comfortable experience. The seats were larger, you know, the meals and everything. But you had to be very rich to afford that ticket. This was not a mass market thing. You know, if you weren't in the top 5% of income earners, you probably weren't going to be able to afford to fly. Whereas today, you know, it is incredibly affordable. You know, the vast majority of Americans have flown in their lifetime. Around half of people get on an airplane every single year, and airfare is getting cheaper every successive year. And so I think that's a wonderful thing, that air travel is not something that is just reserved for the rich and the elite like it used to be, but that it's accessible for most people, and that travel is much more possible for people in a way that didn't used to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes people complain about it, and I'm not going to be the one who complains. I'm going to be the one who is like, you know what? I'm okay with those smaller seats if it means that there are, because I can afford to upgrade if I want to, right?
If you want to, yeah.
But I personally choose not to most of the time. I'm like, you know what? I can take 2 hours and just kind of like,
it's almost a test of will. Like, can I?
Yes,
can
exactly.
I get, can I get
exactly.
This?
Exactly.
It's like a workout. what kind of discipline do you have?
Can I push myself?
Yeah. Well, obviously this is a trend that we love seeing, where air travel is becoming more affordable. Let's talk about a trend that we don't like seeing, which is that like many folks don't take all of their vacation time. You know, a lot of folks are choosing to work over rest and play, even though we say that we want to travel more. So, yeah, Scott, like, what's up with that? What's up with the culture here in the U.S. when it comes to travel, especially when it comes to airfare?
Yeah, look, the U.S. is one of the worst countries in the world at actually taking vacation days. And look, that's partly a story of... unlike many pure countries, there's no requirement for paid time off. There are certainly many jobs that don't have paid vacation as part of it. But even among people who do have paid vacation days in their job, you look at usage statistics, and it's not only is it low by international standards, it's in many ways getting worse. I mean, American vacation days went from on average 20 days or so in the mid 90s that people would take off per year to closer to, you know, 15, 16 to today. Wow. Millennials tend to be even worse on it. People all say, you know, we want to take more vacations, we want to travel more, and yet we're taking fewer and fewer days off. And in my mind, that's mostly a question of what is the biggest hurdle that's stopping people from taking more vacations and traveling more than they would want to? Is it a question of not having enough vacation days? Certainly that's the case for some people, but by and large, that doesn't seem to be the constraining factor. I think the constraining factor is the headache, volatility, and uncertainty of booking flights. It's the most volatile purchase that we regularly make. You have no idea, you know, is the airfare that I'm seeing from Atlanta to Amsterdam, is this a good fare? Is this a bad fare? Should I book today? Should I wait? It's such a daunting task for most people that, you know, if you wind up overpaying for your flights, you get one shot at it. And if you wind up overpaying, it kind of casts a little bit of a cloud over the trip. You feel like you have to pinch pennies to make up for the expensive flights. You kind of have this existential pressure on your shoulders to enjoy the vacation sufficient with what you paid for that flight. Whereas on the converse, you know, you think back to that $130 flight I got to Milan. That was a real revelation for me, because unlike past trips where I felt that pressure to make the expense of the trip worth it, this time I felt like I was playing with house money. I felt like, oh my gosh, you know, I saved so much on flights. Not only can I just splurge on the actual vacation itself, you know, buy better meals, do more fun activities, stuff where I might have pinched pennies beforehand. So not only did I have a better actual trip, but I had a better mental trip because I didn't feel that same sort of pressure to make it all worth it. You know, I could just sort of relax, enjoy myself, and not feel like, oh, I've got to make this worth it because I paid so much for the flights.
That sounds
here.
Like a nice vacation.
Yeah.
Instead you
of
don't...
like, I got to get up at 7:30 every morning and got to start hitting the sights.
Must maximize the day.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, it became a revelation because not only for this specific trip, but I realized, well, what if you extend this further? What if most of the trips you take are ones where you're not overpaying, but instead getting a good deal? All of a sudden, you can start to not only, you know, if you pay $300 or $400 for your flight to Europe rather than $1,000, that means you can take three vacations for the price that you used to pay for one. So not only do you get to have more time doing it, but you get to explore more places. You get to not just go to the big, you know, not just go to Paris Paris or London, but to go to, I don't know, Vilnius or go to Copenhagen or go to Valencia, places that might be not as high on the average tourist list, but places that might appeal to you personally. You get to wind up exploring more places, finding places that appeal to you as an individual. And I find you end up having a better travel experience as a result of being able to do that sampling because you got cheaper flights in the first place. So writing this book and sort of exploring that, well, what are the knock-on effects of getting cheap flights? I came away from it realizing that they're even more life-changing than I had realized to begin with. And that's why I'm out here preaching the cheap flight gospel, because it's not just about saving money. It's about actually having better vacations and more of them.
Yes. I love it. Well, and I love your desire to get people not just to take an extra vacation a year, but to take a lot more vacations. And you say actually those shorter trips, because of the anticipation factor, it actually makes it a richer experience. I love that too. How even just looking forward to and then remembering your trip, having more trips gives you more to look forward to and then more to remember. Mm. But on top of that, though, longer travel is actually starting to become more popular right now. So I'm curious to get your take on that, because more people working remotely, maybe from a random destination, like I'm going to spend a month in Portugal or I'm going to spend a month over here. That's happening more than ever before. Like Airbnb is reporting less week-long stays, more month-long stays, right? So do you have any tips for folks who want to travel and also simultaneously work abroad?
Yeah, I'm so glad you touched on that sort of psychology aspect, because I think one of the biggest mistakes we make when we think about travel is only thinking about travel happiness as something that happens during the trip. When in reality, when you go look at research of how people tend to enjoy travel, we actually get as much joy, if not more joy, from anticipating a trip, from looking forward to a trip, from daydreaming about that wonderful, you know, cafe we're going to hang out in Paris, that great beach we're going to sip a cocktail in Rio. And you know, on our daydreams are not only free, they are flawless. Nothing bad ever happens when we think about that cafe in Paris. When in reality, during a trip, you know, I don't know, there are a bunch of cars honking nearby, the waiter forgets your drink order. It rains. Like, stuff happens. But this is why, in large part, the looking forward to a trip and reminiscing about a trip, we tend to do it with rose-colored glasses. And so I think we actually end up enjoying it more, and why I think trying to separate out and take more vacations, if you've got 3 weeks of vacation a year, taking 3 one-week vacations will lead to more happiness than taking 1 3-week vacation. But, you know, when I wrote this was at a time just before this sort of work from anywhere became much more the norm. And so, it's something that I think has become, like, that long, slow travel is actually much more plausible now, because you're not having to come home in a sense. You know, you're not having to go there and then come back. Your time is less constrained for this 3 weeks of vacation you might have a year, and then more of like travel now as a lifestyle where you actually live is changing. And so you can really take advantage of it to be able to see far more places, especially if you're like traveling over to Europe, where by far the largest travel expense is just the flight across the ocean. But once you get to Europe, you know, between the trains, the budget airlines there and everything else, it's really easy to pop over from Madrid to Barcelona, Barcelona to Rome, Rome to Milan, Milan to Paris. You know, like it's, you know, under $100, if not cheaper, for any one of those legs, whereas the expense of getting across the ocean is oftentimes the biggest one that folks are facing. And so if you are inclined to do that slow kind of travel and work from anywhere, doing it in a place where you can bop around, whether that's Europe, whether that's Southeast Asia, where there's a lot of infrastructure to support that, is, I think, a really kind of shrewd way to go. And I love it just as a sampling thing, to be able to test out, see how you like different places. And then for the ones that you like, you can always come back to later, knowing, you know, Paris isn't going anywhere. You know, Bangkok's not going anywhere. That's you can true. Always come back and visit more, even if you don't get everything you want out of this one trip.
Yeah, it just takes the pressure off of it being like the perfect experience, the perfect trip. It's like, you know what? Maybe next time it'll be even better. We can spend even more time here. Scott, we're huge fans of your newsletter. Joel and I, we both get it. Actually, recently you highlighted a like $700 deal to Korea that unfortunately
I forwarded it to Matt. I was like, don't you want to go? Visit your homeland?
I had already forwarded it to my wife because I had saw it that morning as well. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to take advantage of that one. But can you tell our listeners how they can sign up for that newsletter? How does it all work?
Yeah, you can go to scottscheapflights.com. No apostrophes, no underscores, just scottscheapflights.com. We'd be honored to send you cheap flights out of your home airport. You just put in your email, tell us what your home airport is, and then we're going to be searching and making sure that you never miss a great deal popping up from your home airport. And lastly, you know, as sad as I am to hear that this specific Korea deal wasn't the one, one of the things I've learned on my 7 years now of working as a cheap flight expert is that I have been shocked at just how voluminous cheap fares are. That at the outset, I worried, are there going to be enough deals out there that I can, that like, that this is going to be possible as a company, as a business, and everything else. And that has not once been a problem. Every single day for the past 7 years, we have found cheap flights, especially, you know, flights overseas, not ones that are saving $50 or $75. On average, our international deals are saving $550 round trip. So even though this specific Korea deal didn't work out, there's going to be another one, I guarantee it.
I love it.
All right, we'll be on the lookout for that. Scott, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Always, always great to be here. Thank you so much for having me back.
Scott, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Joel, man, what a fun conversation. I swear, every time we talk to Scott, it just makes me want to spend a lot of money. Or it makes me not want to spend a lot of money. It makes me want to spend some time looking up the cheap flights and making sure that I am taking advantage of all the vacation days that we have carved out in our how to money schedule. But for you, real quick, what was your big takeaway from this conversation with Scott?
I just got to say, some folks have like a Mount Rushmore of superheroes that they love or of entertainment stars. Scott, I think Scott Kies would be on our Mount Rushmore of frugal money saving dudes.
That's a pretty tall order
individuals,
right there.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, it's just fun too to talk to somebody when it comes, like he's an expert in a way that we spend our money that's very fun.
Yes.
Right? Because you take that same passion, that same expertise and apply it to taxes. or something a little bit drier, it's still going to be a less interesting, less engaging conversation because we're not super excited.
It's more the medicine you've got to take, right?
So, exactly.
You still need the information, but it's not quite as joyful to receive it.
Totally.
All right. Well, yeah, my big takeaway was when Scott said the average airfare going up, well, that doesn't mean that there aren't any cheap flights. And we briefly alluded to this on Friday's episode, and Scott talked about it in this interview.
That's right.
Where just because you see those headline numbers that inflation is making everything more expensive, including flights, yes, the average airfare is more expensive, but it doesn't mean you can't score a ridiculously cheap deal. And in fact, Scott talked about all of the reasons you can still score a cheap deal. So don't pay attention to that stuff. Pay attention instead to the low numbers of the airfare that you can get because of this new era of cheap flights that we're in. But yeah, what was your big takeaway?
That's right. My big takeaway was going to be really broad, which is, so his splurge was, he was talking about the annual fees that he pays towards his credit cards. And dude, you and I, we hate fees. but this is one of those situations where if you are taking advantage of a product, then it can be worth the fees. It kind of reminds me of debt, right? Like, I don't think I'm ever going to say that debt is good. However, debt might be this thing that you pay a little bit on, especially if it's a very low interest rate, if it allows you to achieve even bigger things. And so in the same way with Scott with his credit cards, he's willing to pay a small fee, whether it's $95 or $695. He's willing to pay that annual fee on that card because I know he is taking full advantage of all of the benefits of each one of those cards.
He's getting his money's worth.
In that baseball cards collecting binding.
Which I still want to see. Send us a picture, please, Scott.
I can only imagine how awesome that thing looks. But I just wanted to mention that as sort of like a general meta takeaway because there are things that we can do and it depends on your specific situation. But it is important to keep the big picture in mind. Let's go ahead and shift gears, introduce the beer that you and I enjoyed during this episode. This was Evolutions of Boris the Crusher. This is a Hop and Frog beer. What was your take on this one?
Yeah, so this one was a caramel macchiato stout. So it was interesting.
Right.
It was definitely sweet, had like dessert-like vibes, and it definitely had those like that macchiato thing going on, which is not totally my jam necessarily, mm-hmm. right? It's definitely leans in the sweeter direction. I prefer more dark chocolate vibes than like milk chocolate sweet. But I still appreciated this beer because it really did reflect exactly what it said it was going to taste like. And even though that's not the thing I typically go for on the beer shelf, this one did a really good job of pulling it off.
Yeah, and by the way, the Boris stands for Bodacious Oatmeal Russian Imperial Stout. So it's an entire line that Hop and Frog has. But I'm kind of with you, man. And so I guess they call it the macchiato because it tastes a little burnt. So even though you said sweet, there is definitely this bitterness going on. And the caramel flavors, it reminds me of going to a coffee shop and they've got those bottles of the different syrups.
Get the drizzle?
Not the drizzle, but it's like it's the clear syrups. You know the bottles and the
pumps on the top?
The glass is clear and they kind of do like a little, you know, they do a shots worth of whatever that is.
Uh-huh.
I've never been a fan of that because it tastes like kind of artificial in my mind, as opposed to, you know, if there's an actual drizzle of real caramel on top. I like that. I don't like the caramel flavoring or, you know, like the caramel sugar syrup as much. And I feel like this one kind of reminds me of that. It was still a very enjoyable beer. But that being said, it just wasn't my absolute favorite. But I'm still glad that you and I got to enjoy this one today. But that's going to be it. We'll make sure to link to where you can sign up for Scott's emails. We'll have that up in our show notes at howtomoney.com.
We'll also link to Scott's book, Take More Vacations.
That is right.
Which is definitely worth reading. And
it's a great book.
Don't forget to sign up for our new email newsletter. And that's really easy to do on our website at howtomoney.com/newsletter. Thanks in advance. All right, that's going to do it, Matt, for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.